Give me the flats of dawn with plenty of tailing fish.
And the perfect fly rod.
Yeah!
And get ready for some magic.
Oh, that's awesome eat!
I got one!
Oh, damn, I got him, you got it. I got him.
Join Bonefish and Tarpon Trust.
Nice fish.
And help make sure that the magic never ends. Visit tarbone.org to find out how you can help.
Good Monday evening to everybody. As you can tell by the rainstorm that you just heard, it has been a soggy weekend down here in Central Florida. If you're a NASCAR fan, you already know that. But apparently they've got the race kicking right now. And all is well in the world of NASCAR. All is well in the world of kayak fishing as well. On the line with me tonight, I have... Oh, first of all, let me introduce myself. I'm sorry. I'm your host, Charles Levi, also known as Redfish Chuck. On the line, as always, I've got Mark, the landing crew wheeler. How are you, buddy?
Doing good, buddy. How are you?
I am fantastic. And awesome. And I also have Mr. Becker.
Boondoggle. I still haven't gotten it all out of my system yet. Sorry.
Boondoggle. It's all right, man. No problem. It's the new hunting chat chant that we all yell out when we're on our way to either the water or the woods or whatever. Just boondoggle, boondoggle, boondoggle. It's fun to say. However, I did realize today that Venice, Louisiana is the same distance from my house than that is Virginia Beach. So, I don't know, man. If I'm going to make another trip at the end of this year or whatever, I might be seriously contemplating making a left as opposed to heading up the coast. I don't know. We'll have to see. I don't know. The redfish in Venice are kind of calling my name and have been for a long time. No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't miss out on a boondoggle. If I can make it there, I'll be there. But I definitely think that's a place we need to consider doing a boondoggle. But boondoggle news aside, I've got another caller calling in right now. Is that you, Rob? Or is it Haywood? Rob Haywood, somebody? Nobody. Anyhow, yeah, I see Rob Joyce telling me. Flounder, sheepies, stripers. Yeah, I know. I'm pretty sure we'll end up there. But anyhow, let's see. Lots of things to get to. The topic of tonight's going to be pretty simple. Is it spring yet? It seems to be spring. It has a very spring-type feel to it down here. Then again, we haven't really had much of a winter. So with that being said, I find myself every time I go to hit the water here, especially if you're by Mosquito Lagoon or north end of the Indian River, doing things that I probably shouldn't be doing in February as far as lures and presentation and the way that we're attacking these fish. It always begs the question whether or not the fish truly think that they haven't gone through the winter phase yet. The water temperatures never really got that cold here. And we're really pretty much just dealing with a very aggressive fishery. I know I spoke with Rob DeVore, and he was telling me that over on the West Coast that the guys over there have been crushing ladyfish and trout and reds and all kinds of and flounder, and they've been all really, really aggressive. I know the fish down south in Chokoleski were pretty aggressive as well. The last time I got out on the water up here, I haven't seen anything like I've seen it this particular winter as far as aggressive fish. I don't know, maybe it's just me, but it seems that every time I find a big trout or whatever, I'm catching them on topwater plugs, or I'm catching them on jerk shads, worked kind of quick as opposed to real slow. I found a lot of fish. I was able to sight fish this wintertime, and caught a lot of big trout. In fact, I probably had the best winter of trout fishing I think I've ever had. I don't know if RJ Vermont's found the same thing, but I know it's been pretty good. So, really, what I'm anticipating now is I'm hoping to find that these fish are going to get even more crazy now that the shrimp run has started in the intercoastal waterway here. And I mean, the shrimp are thick. I've got buddies of mine who've been going out every night getting their limits of shrimp, so it's pretty good. When that happens, typically what what you tend to see is you'll see a more aggressive redfish bite. You'll find the trout to kind of get off the flats a little bit and get out in deeper water. And the nighttime fishing can be super awesome. But it's a very interesting situation that we're in. I think today the high was like we're in the 80s. I think this afternoon. Rainstorms and that kind of thing. We dipped down to the 60s yesterday, but the day before that we're in the 80s. So it's like, you know, the water hasn't really gotten cold. So I don't know. It makes for fun fishing. You know, if you're not familiar with this area, I hope to one day host a boondoggle here as opposed to guys driving down to fish with us. Show you guys what we have here as far as, a tremendous inshore fishery. I know some guys are still catching some tarpon inshore. There's guys that are still catching a bunch of snook down south in the river. But as we speak, we have a migration of what we call turds. Yeah, that's right. I said it, turds, that are coming up the coastline. And for those of you that don't know what a turd is, we call cobias turds here. Look like a big brown turd swimming through the water. They're on their way, and with that, the spring really kind of kicks off. And what you're going to start to see down around areas like Playlinda Beach and down towards Patrick Air Force Base and Cocoa Beach Pier and those areas down there, Melbourne Beach included, and down around Sebastian, is you're going to start to see big, giant wads of menhaden or pogies and or mullet even. And those cobias will be in and amongst other prey items. Other predatory fish such as big giant redfish and black-tip sharks and bull sharks and kingfish. And every once in a while, a stray sailfish will move in pretty close. So it gets to be pretty interesting. I'll tell you what, I'm really anticipating that cobia run / tarpon run as well. The tarpon migration will start there shortly thereafter the cobia show up, and we get some giant tarpon off our beaches here. Nothing quite as big as Punta Gorda or those areas in the West Coast, but man, we get some solid fish. So look for a bunch of tips and techniques to come through the next couple of episodes of the show on how to approach those bait pods, how to launch off the beach, how to effectively fish out there without getting run over by the 55 or 60 boats that'll be, you know, swarming the 2-mile stretch area where these pogies will be held up. But let me go back to the phone lines real quick. I think I got Rob, a bad backcast of war, with me.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
What's going on, buddy?
Sorry, I'm late.
No, it's all right, man. You haven't missed much. Let's see. I also have
What are you talking about, man? Spring tactics?
Yeah. We're talking a little bit about we really never had a winter down here as far as a true wintertime kind of a pattern.
It's been warm this winter, man.
Yeah, it has. It's been super warm. So it's been really kind of tough to make a game plan, when you get out on the water. I find myself having to switch a lot of time to different techniques and different lures and throw stuff that normally I wouldn't throw until the springtime. But it's been exciting because the fishing's been really good. Let's see, I got a 757 area code.
Yeah, that's me.
Me?
Yeah. Oh, what's up?
Not much.
Thanks for joining.
How y'all doing?
We're doing good, man. We're doing good.
All right.
And I got a 707 area code as well.
Hey, Chuck. Spike here from the California coast. Just checking in for some pogey tips.
Spike, you're the man.
How you guys all doing?
We're doing good, buddy. We're doing good. Yeah, I was just about to get into our offshore fishery here, off the beaches kind of thing. We're getting ready to ramp up into that here in the next couple of weeks. And it's definitely something that you need to prepare yourself for if you plan on doing it down here, if you've never done it before. I don't know how many listeners I have in the chat room that are from the Central Florida area. I know I got a couple in there. I think Pepe and a couple other guys are in there. But if you've never launched off the beach before, it's a good time to start trying. The wind has been kind of rough the last couple of weeks, but it should start dying down after this front pushes through. And do as many dry runs off the beach as you can to kind of prepare yourself for what you're going to experience come the time the cobias really start showing up and the bait pods show up as well. Because you got to understand that even though the wind might only be 5 mile an hour out of the west or out of the east or whichever direction, you're going to be dealing with the wakes coming off of big boats that are running up and down the beach looking for cobias. And it's basically the same as having a pretty significant offshore breeze. So, being able to launch from the beach successfully without rolling your boat over and losing half your gear is kind of an important task to try and undertake. But the best way, I would say the best thing to do in the way that I've been able to find fish in the past is to just drive up and down the coastline first thing in the morning. There's no need to get out super early. I mean, when we leave out of the port on a boat to go look for cobias, we really try to go out and look for those fish after around 10 or 11 o'clock when you got really good sunlight so you can really spot them real well. But if you're paddling off the beach, take your time and drive the beach up and down to the different accesses until you find those pelicans diving or you find, birds swooping down. And sometimes you'll see tarpon rolling through the bait pods from the beach access. You'll see kingfish jumping out of the air. And it's a pretty good idea. It's a pretty good indication that you're in the right spot. Now, we've got two separate styles of cobia fishing here. We've got bait pod fishing, which is super easy. I mean, anybody can go out there and catch a cobia off a bait pod, really. And then we have finding cobias that are swimming on manta rays or swimming with manta rays. Every now and again, you'll find some free swimmers. But typically this time of year, you'll find more more concentrated numbers of fish either on the bait pods or you'll find them on the manta rays. So, one of the things that I like about my Jackson kayak, and I'm not gonna product drop Jackson all night long, but one of the things that really stood out to me about that boat is the fact that they do have the big rod pod storage in the center hatch. For me, it makes sense for going through the waves to go ahead and tuck my rod up into the center hatch there for safekeeping until I make it through. I can always pull it out once I'm out there. In case I should roll the boat over or whatever, I don't have to worry about a tether. I don't have to worry about dunking my spinner rod or whatever. So that might be something to think about, too. If you have a boat that has a hatch that's big enough to get your rod in, that would be a good idea. If not, tether it off and just wish for the best and hope you don't roll your boat over. The tackle that I use when I'm fishing these bait pods, because, again, you've got, man, there is just an absolute pile of different species that you can try and catch is pretty simple. If I definitely want to target the cobias, I'll bring along with me about a half a dozen 2 ounce bucktail jigs, different colors, pink and white, blue and white, blue and chartreuse, black and pink, orange and black are all really good colors down here. And if I'm going to tip them, I might tip them with either a gulp eel or a gulp squid, or just even just a squid head. Just get a 1 pound box of squid and what was I going to say? Just rip the heads of the squid off. Yeah, I see you guys laughing at me. Thanks, Steve Chapman. That's a pretty simple lure bait combination. One of the other cool things to do, or one of the probably to me the most important things, is to make sure that you're using a setup that you can cast a pretty good ways. If you're going to stand up offshore, which you know most of us that stand up fish could handle that. If you're going to stand up offshore and try and sight fish these fish, it's imperative that you make long casts. And braid allows you to do that. You don't have to use super heavy braid. I use 40-pound braid on an 8,000 size spinner reel. My spinner reel of choice for cobia fishing and tarpon fishing, or just bait pod fishing, is the Shimano Saragossa 8,000. I think it's capable of about 30 pounds of drag, and I use a custom 8-foot spinner rod for that, just so I can hurl that cobia jig a mile. My leader just varies upon what I'm trying to do. If I'm throwing the bucktail jigs, I usually run 60-pound monofilament or 60-pound fluorocarbon if I've got any, and tie off a loop knot, hurl jig at cobia, retrieve, repeat. It's pretty simple. I like to think of cobia as the second dumbest fish in the ocean. I think dolphin probably, or mahi probably, ranks number one as far as stupidity goes, but cobias are not very smart. I've had them chase bucktail jig out of a boat before and then just basically sit there with their face off the transom only to be free gaffed and dropped in the box. So, just be careful. That's the other thing, too, is safety, safety, safety. Make sure you're wearing a PFD. Make sure you have some sort of flag to show yourself so that the boats that are running down the beach can see you. I know that there's probably anywhere between 80 to 120 boats that will be fishing off the beaches this time of year. And, basically the idea is just to make sure that those guys see you. And everybody knows that you're there without running you over. Of course, you want to be safe. But yeah, hurling the jig. I see Manny X got me going there. Yeah, just hurl the jig as far as you can get it, and just keep it up high. What you'll find with these fish, especially the ones that are cruising on manta rays, is the manta rays will be anywhere between 5 and 10 foot below the surface. And if you've never seen a manta ray off the beach or out in the ocean, it looks like the bottom has surfaced and is swimming along, next to you. They're giant, 15 to 18 foot across, and just monster sizes. But the cobia will either lay on top of their back or they'll slide up underneath them. And it's pretty easy to catch them. If you can paddle alongside of them and get parallel with them and cast across their wings, just keep that jig coming right below the surface, and you'll get the attention of at least one of the fish. And as long as you don't stop the jig, they'll come up and clobber it. If they follow it and don't commit to it, just open the bail and let the jig drop, and they'll chase it down the bottom and eat it on the way down. But the most important thing to know about this kind of fishing is fish handling safety. The kayak Kevin leg sweep, throw him in the boat, does not work with cobia. I do not recommend.
Bring it back.
Yeah, I don't recommend anybody trying to do that. That would not be a wise decision. You can go to cobiajigs.com to find cobia jigs, or handlerfishingsupply.com. And I work out there at Handler part time now, and we tie up our own custom cobia jigs. They got giant hooks in them. We make cobia jigs with 7-0s and 8-0 hooks in them, up to 9-0 hooks in them. Extra strong mustad hooks. So for us guys that are throwing braid, if you need to put a lot of pressure on a fish and turn them real hard or get them to the boat real quick, you can do it, and you don't have to worry about breaking them off or bending a hook out straight. But yeah, small hand gaff, if you decide you're going to keep a cobia, is definitely recommended, and a billy club wouldn't hurt, but just be mindful that typically when you gaff a cobia, they're going to want to spin in circles and go absolutely ballistic. So don't have it wrapped around your wrist, because it'll tighten down and snap your wrist. The best way to say it is just be a man about it and hang on to the gaff as best you can, and hopefully get him a good kill shot behind the gills and then bash his head in with a bat and drag them on your lap and head for the beach. That's not great.
It sounds brutal, man, but, dude, those things are absolutely insane, man. I've never got one in a kayak, but I could, you know, for that reason, I don't target those because they got those nasty spikes going down the down their dorsal, and that fish, you could fight that fish for a while, and you think you got them whipped, and you get them in the boat, they just go absolutely bananas, man. So, yeah, definitely carry a big bat or something. You want to bash that thing if you're going to keep it. Those things are nasty.
Another trick, too, you can use if you want, I don't catch and release cobia. If they're legal size, they die. That's just the way it is. I love them. They're delicious eating fish. They're probably one of the best that's out there. Hurl jig. Let's see. Manny Yak is saying hurl jig, check, bash cobia's head in, check. Yeah, pretty much. if you can get a pretty solid piece of wood and drive like a 4-inch nail through it or a 5-inch nail through it, that would be your best bet. Because, you really have to, finish this fish off before you think about putting them in your lap. I've watched them break coolers. I've watched them fling fish box lids off their hinges. I've watched them dislodge center consoles.
Ankles.
Yeah, ankles, breaking ankles. I've seen them. Well, I've had them cut my hand wide open before.
I took a dorsal spike in the shin one time from one.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't, but...
I used an awl. You know what an awl is? It's like a screwdriver that's pointed.
I drilled a hole
in the handle, put that on a lanyard, and get them up next to the boat and literally just, serial killer stab them in the top of the head like a couple times, get them through the brain, and then they're done.
Yeah, yeah. So. It's a great... But I'm telling you, if you get out there, just be prepared for what could be a very long fight. We get some pretty good-sized cobias up here. It's not unrealistic to find some that are in the 60 to 80 pound range. I've seen some even bigger than that. Most of the fish we get here are going to be somewhere in a range of about 30 to 50 pounds. But also, too, while you're fishing bait pods or you're throwing at cobias, there's always that chance that 120, 150 pound tarpon could come up and gobble up your jig. Or if you're throwing live baits at them, you can do it that way, too. A real simple way to fish the bait pods for cobias and be really successful is... Just take a standard kingfish treble hook, which is like a number 4 or number 6 extra strong treble hook, and VMC makes a great one. Eagle Claw makes a good one, and take a small, like a maybe a 1 ounce, even lighter than that, depending upon how deep you have to get into the bait, but a small 1 ounce egg sinker, and let it slide all the way down like a knocker rig down to the top of the treble hook. And cast that into the center of the bait pod and snatch yourself a pogie. Just snag a pogie, open your bail, let the pogie drop. The weight alone will make it hard for the pogie to swim upright like the rest of the ones in the bait pod. And he'll stand out like a sore thumb. So the cobias or the tarpon or whatever else is down there will see it and will come cruising up and just clobber it. And you'll have a lot of fun doing it that way. And you don't have to carry a lot of gear with you, Obviously, if you're fishing with a treble hook and you hook a 50-pound cobia, you're going to want to kind of loosen your drag and let them kind of run a little bit, especially using braid and a fluorocarbon leader with little to no stretch, But it's a great tactic. It works real well. I've done it a ton of times out of the boat, and it's really, really cool. Another thing that's going on here locally with this offshore thing is I've spoken to a few of our local charter captains that run offshore trips, and we're trying to set up mothership trips to other areas where we can get the kayaks to that are a little bit more quiet and less boat traffic, easier to deal with cobias and that kind of thing. So look for that. I'll post some of that information up on my Facebook page as we're getting deeper and deeper into the season.
I'll fly across the country for a mothership trip.
Well, fly across the country, Spike. I'll get you on one, buddy. I got plenty enough friends of mine that are anxious to watch us do that. And in fact, I've talked about it last year, but this year it's going to happen. The mothership trip of the lifetime for me is taking a kayak out to the 120-mile nautical buoy out of Port Canaveral and target yellowfin tunas and blackfins and skipjacks and dolphin and whatever other creatures decide to come along. So, yeah, that's going to be awesome. But
give me a date and time, and I'm driving down there.
I'm telling you.
If it's okay, I wanted to interject one thing real quick before you got too far into another topic. For landing those big, dangerous, scary fish, and I'm telling you, you really got me thinking about the cobia because it's something I've wanted to target for a long time. There is a company, I think they're in New Jersey, called South Chatham Tackle, C-H-A-T-H-A-M. I'm guessing it's in South Chatham. And this guy makes gaffs and landing accessories, and he made me a little stainless steel harpoon dart that I use just for that very reason. If I were to get a halibut that's too big or be fishing tropical waters, or now lucky enough to hook into a big cobia that I hope is in my future, one of these things is going to kill it and retain it very quickly. Placed appropriately into its head.
Very nice.
And
I'm
thinking for those over 100-pound tunas. I've never used the dart for that. I've always swung two gaffs to get the bigger tunas to the side of the boat and just pin them to the boat and me while they're dying. But I'm really liking this harpoon dart thing. He makes a flying gaff, too, but it's way too big for anything that for our purposes at this point. We'll see how it goes with kayak fishing.
Yeah, I don't know that I want to tether an angry fish off to the side of the boat with a flying gaff unless I hit him with a kill shot.
Is, again, it's all placement. That whatever you tag, it's going to die pretty quick.
Yeah, of course. No, I like the dart idea. In fact, one of the preferred methods of killing cobias down here in Florida has now become using spear guns to do so. And it's something that a lot of guys don't think about. You can paddle these kayaks out, use a very small anchor to keep it in place because you're not dealing with a whole lot of current, and jump off in a bait pod and swim down and shoot yourself a cobia with a spear gun, and now you can deal with the fish on a different level. If you're a good shot, you can kill them deader than nails right there. But I've got a buddy of mine who does this kind of on a crazy level. If you guys ever want to see some crazy wild underwater footage, go to vimeo.com, type in Josh Ball, B-A-L-L, cobia, and watch this guy's videos. He's out of his mind. The guy chums bull sharks to him and shoots cobias off the bull sharks. So free diving, no tank, no other divers in the water. So yeah, it's pretty intense, but you'll see every now and again, he'll shoot one that'll put up a pretty good fight, and he'll pull out a dive knife and start stabbing it. I think, as Chad said, like serial killer style. And it sometimes takes a while. It works. It definitely works, but sometimes it takes a while, especially on a real big fish. And, that's just the thing is you never know, especially fishing bait pods, the size of fish you're going to pull out of there. Cause most of the time you're never going to see them. They're down underneath the bait pod, pushing the bait up, and they're feeding from the bottom, as opposed to finding them free swimming or being on the back of manta rays and that kind of thing.
I get their head up right up to the boat. And you know that freak out factor for a cobia is when you lift it. They usually get them up to the side of the boat and they're fine. It's either when you gaff them or try to tail wrap them or pull them in the boat that they freak out.
Yep.
So if you pull their head right up to the boat, you know, where their mouth is, it's almost like their mouth in the boat. Their brain is about 2 inches back of dead center between their eyes. And if you hit them right there, it's almost a done deal. The other thing that works pretty good is that thing you rasp the hole out with when you're plugging a tire. You know what I'm talking about? The little thing that's got a little bit of a – but I stabbed one with that one time and couldn't get the sumage back out because the grip on the shaft wouldn't let it come back out. But an awl is perfect because it's tapered down. It makes a progressively bigger hole as it goes in, so it's real easy to pull it out. And it hardly ever takes more than one time. But I just reel them up there, grab the awl, pop them in the top of the head. If they freak out, I just let them run again, and they usually only have a little bit of freak out left in them, and then you're good, you know. So, and you don't have to worry about that second wind that they have. Sometimes you beat them up, You get them to the boat, you put them between your legs, you're paddling in. And like I'm like you, I release everything for the most part except the cobia. If it's legal, it's going on the grill because they make great steaks. And I've had them come back to life in my lap, and that's not fun.
Oh. Yeah, not fun at all. I've had the same thing happen after throwing them in a box for a while and pull them out for a quick picture, and they come back to life and start beating the living tar out of me. That's never fun. But you know, also, too, so we've got tarpon, we've got cobia. While you're paddling from bait pod to bait pod, or you're looking out paddling around looking for cobias that are free swimming, keep your eyes peeled for what looks like giant leaves floating on the surface. Those are triple tail. Probably a close second, in my opinion, as far as tasty fish out of the ocean to the cobia and to the tilefish, I guess tilefish, but that's definitely not in our realm of possibilities of catching out of a kayak unless you definitely do a mothership trip and feel like reeling a fish up from 600 foot of water, which I don't feel like doing. But triple tail are pretty aggressive up here. They're not as aggressive as they are down in Southwest Florida. But a well-placed shrimp out in front of them where they can see it is almost always a dead-on catch. So definitely a fish worthy of targeting, definitely a fish worthy of taking home for the grill or for the frying pan. It's a delicious eating fish. Looks like a big giant Oscar if you've never seen a triple tail before. They fight extremely hard. They grow to just giant sizes here off of Port Canaveral. In fact, I think all but one IGFA world record was caught outside of Port Canaveral, Florida. It's not uncommon to find them here in the 25-pound range to 30-pound range, which is just a giant. Yeah, those are giant fish. And I've had them. What's that?
So they eat real good.
Oh yeah, they do. They're absolutely tasty. I've had them come out from underneath sea turtles before, where I thought it was a cobia laying up underneath them, or you could just barely see because the sun's not quite right. Throw out a sea turtle with a bucktail jig and had a giant triple tail swim out and eat the bucktail jig just like it would be a cobia. And you know, they're a lot of fun to catch. Another fish though to be careful of when you get them next to the boat. If you got a big landing net, that would probably be preferred. They've got gill rakers that will cut you wide open. Their fins are pretty sharp, but they're fairly easy to handle once they're next to the boat. But so you've got, we've talked about real quick the triple tail, we've talked about tarpon, we've talked about cobia. It's all off the beach outside of Brevard County in the Space Coast area, all up and down the eastern seaboard, really. The guys down south around Stewart and Fort Pierce right now are just laying waste to the cobia population. So I'm really hoping that we're going to have a good solid run of fish here shortly. But let's see. Also, too, you're going to find Spanish mackerel and bluefish inside these bait pods. As I said before, sharks, tons of sharks. If you ever thought about tying into a big shark off a kayak, you can have all you want with that. And kingfish. A kingfish is a little bit of a different fish that you might would want to go out and try and target out of the kayak. It might be a little tough for most unless you have a decent live well system or something like that where you can keep a couple pogies alive or some pinfish alive or some mullet alive. But a pretty standard kingfish rig, short piece of like number four wire with a number four treble hook or two number four treble hooks tied haywire twist style in between a short piece of maybe 6 inches, 6 to 8 inches of wire, depending upon the size of the bait you're pulling. One treble hook goes in the fish's nose, one treble hook goes in the bait's back, or just you can let it just kind of flail next to it. It's fine. Pitch it out behind the kayak and just let it kind of swim away a little bit. Stick it in a rod holder, paddle around for about 5-10 minutes outside of a bait pod, and you should hook up a good size smoker kingfish pretty quick when they're around. There's a few bait fish that are preferred, blue runners, that kind of thing. Blue runners, goggle eyes, mullet, pogies, pinfish work fine. Basically, if it's kind of shiny and you throw it out behind the boat and you pull it for any length of time, it's going to get eaten. So,
Houndfish, man, are kingfish crack.
Yeah.
They will bypass everything else to eat one of those hounds. You know,
yeah.
It's amazing. I've seen it twice, and it's just like, wow.
Yeah, you, well, you can do that. You can mess with the chat. I got a little bit of background coming from you, buddy. I'm going to mute you for a minute. You can throw a Rapala X-Wrap or a big Yuzuri lip plug out behind the kayak as well and just paddle that along rather than having to mess with live bait and fish a super light drag. That's, I think, probably one of the number one problems that guys or issues guys have with trying to catch kingfish from kayaks is using too heavy a drag. You're talking about a fish that swims 30 miles an hour, but the problem is their faces are pretty soft. Being a mackerel, that's just, you know, by nature, their faces are soft. Also, too, using a treble hook, if you use a lot of drag, you're going to pull hooks out of their face all day. You can troll spoons. I see LGB's asking, how about trolling spoons? You can troll spoons if you want, but the only problem is you really kind of got to paddle or pedal, depending upon what your situation is, to be able to keep up and keep that spoon up off the bottom and keep it up in the bite area, the strike zone, if you will. Which X-Wrap pattern, it doesn't make a difference. As long as it's a decent size, and they make those like almost magnum size, they're like, I want to say they're 8 to 12 inch long plugs. You can, any color works. It's not, there really is no color preference. You can use, anything with chartreuse in it, anything with pink in it, anything silver, black, blue, it doesn't make a difference. If it's moving and it looks right, something's going to eat it. Yeah, it should be a lot of fun here in the next couple of months. We'll see what all happens. But not diverting off of the beach. If you get a chance to come down here and do some fishing around the Port Canaveral area, spend some time and fish around the jetties themselves. We have an area to the north of the North Jetty called the Canaveral Bight, which is south of the lighthouse. And if you paddle up along the beach that way, you can see the launch towers from the Space Center for the rockets, and also too, if you paddle further north than that, you'll see the shuttle launch towers as well. And you can really get on the kingfish and that kind of thing up in the bite. It's really good fishing. Also too, casting in towards shore, there's a great snook fishery up that way, great red fishery up that way. This time of year, we get giant wads of big, huge breeder redfish that cruise offshore and just assemble like right in that bite area. And they'll be, I don't know, usually anywhere from 400 to 600 or 700 of them. And you can catch them in 40 foot of water on topwater plugs. They're so thick. It's the craziest thing you'll ever see. And these are giant fish. Most of these fish are averaging 45 inches to 50 plus inches. So a lot of fun. Carrying safety equipment, making sure that you carry stuff with you that, again, keeps you nice and visible, whether your vest is super bright colored or you got a flag on you, Yak Attack style Visipole. But a VHF radio is pretty important. Make sure you've got one. The Coast Guard station's right inside Port Canaveral. If you should get tired and caught up, the wind changes direction, what have you, at least you can kind of hail somebody driving by you or try and get with somebody. But you know, it's a good time of year, man. This is the winter time and the springtime are my two favorite times to fish, because there's just so much to do. It gets crazy. The inshore fishery is consistent from now till probably midsummer. You'll start to find the tarpon will start moving back in the river. We'll start finding some more snook. The redfish and trout bite will still be the same, as epic as it always will be. The black drum will still be hanging around. The no motor zone area around Cars Park, which is pretty famous for most of the guys on the forums and stuff. If you're not from this area, you've probably heard of it. That's always really good this time of year, into the later parts of the spring. Let's see. Any gators yet? Gators as in alligators or gators as in trout? Alligators, yeah, there's been piles of them. But let's see. Oh, real quick, I almost forgot something. Mr. Becker has an announcement he'd like to make.
Oh, I didn't realize it was going to be that quick. Thanks. For those of you, not to change the subject, and I do want to mention that I did in the in the chat room. The only gear I saw last weekend was the one in the drainage ditch along I-75, where Haywood and I sat alongside the road contemplating the scenery for a couple hours. But for those of you who've spent any time at all on yakangler.com or around the Boondoggle or around any of the stuff I've written recently, I came across a product at the Tampa Bay Frogman Swim over the winter called Killcliff. It's not an energy drink. It's a recovery drink. And if you want to find out about it, you can go to yakangler.com and read the review. But for those of you who have looked at it, I just want to let you know that we were able to get a discount code for yakangler.com and kayakfishingradio.com, folk, family, friends, et cetera. If you use the code YAKANGLER on their website in the coupon code box, you'll get 10% off, and they include shipping on cases of the product. So if you've wanted to try it and haven't, I just want to let you know there's a discount code out there to save you a couple bucks more. Thanks, Chuck.
No problem. Thank you for that, buddy. So the question just came up about gators. I asked if it was the reptile style or the trout, and the trout was the question. Yeah, man, there's it has been good. I haven't seen the number of big trout in this area that in the last couple of weeks, actually last couple of months, as I've seen in the 20 plus years of living here. It's dumb right now. The Indian River, the Banana River, the No Motor Zone, the Mosquito Lagoon, everywhere. It's just, they're just piled, just giant fish. When I say giant fish, the last time I was out looking for trout was when I was still fishing that tournament, the 3-2-1 fish tournament. And I saw a trout that honest to God, I thought was a snook. It was so big. And I didn't realize it was a trout until it swam right past my feet and kind of flicked me the bird with his fin as he swam past me. And it had to have been 35 to 36 inches, just a giant. And I've seen several of them that size in the last couple of weeks or last couple of months. But I've caught more fish over 20 inches this past, if you want to call it winter, I call it fall, than I ever have, with tons of them over 25. So the technique that I was using for those fish was pretty simple. Paddle to an area that looked kind of fishy. Sounds easy enough, right? Find yourself a spot where there's a lot of bait or there's an insane amount of sand. Usually around dock pilings you'll find, or in between docks you'll find sandy areas, that kind of thing. And just be as stealthy as you can getting into those areas, and you can see them. You'll spook more of them than you'll catch, because just by virtue of them being big, giant gator trout, they blend in so well to the bottom. I think Chip Gibson's in the chat room. He can attest to how many of them you'll paddle over, as well as Mark Lozier, just by paddling. I mean, it's kind of crazy, but what I was throwing to them is just a shad tail, 3 to 4 inch long shad tail on a 32nd ounce jig head, as light of a jig head as you can get away with. And an eighth of an ounce is okay too. Just don't go much heavier than that. And cast way out past these fish and drop the bait basically right on their face. It's pretty awesome. Most of it being sight fishing for what I'm doing. Lipless crankbait, stuff like Twitch and Wraps from Rapala, Miradines from Miralure, Sabeel, Stick Shads, any of those kind of things work well too. The only thing that I was finding that was kind of interesting is that the further into the bank you went, the bigger the fish would be. So when you're fishing in an area where you're in like maybe 8 inches of water, you're standing in the water in like 8 inches of water, and you think to yourself, well, as long as I look out towards the deeper water, you know, I'm going to find these fish. That really isn't the case. You had to kind of turn around and watch behind you, and you'd see these big shadows just kind of cruising around, and you could pick up more than your fair share of them just by being kind of stealthy. Use light leaders if you can. 12 to maybe 15 pound test. I tend to use monofilament when I'm fishing for big trout as opposed to fluorocarbon, because I'm using braid, and I like to have a little bit of stretch. Trout have a tendency of pulling hooks, so That's just my little tip, I guess. If there's going to be a tip of the week, that would probably be it. Think of the fish you're trying to target before you get too caught up into whether or not you need to use fluorocarbon for it or what have you. My granddaddy never needed fluorocarbon to catch a bunch of fish, nor did my dad, and they didn't make it back then. So, you know, whatever. I know that it has its advantages at times, I guess, but I've caught just as many fish on monofilament leaders as I ever have a fluorocarbon. But you'll get a little bit more stretch out of a typical monofilament leader than you will out of the fluoro. So if you're running braid with a knot connection, just run the monofilament. You'll see you won't pull so many hooks, and you don't have to spend $25 on a spool of leader material. You spend $4, you know. So I don't know. Anyhow. So let's see, what else? Black drum are going to be pretty prevalent. And I don't know, I don't like black drum personally as far as a target species, because I've never had a whole lot of success catching them on artificials. I get them every now and again on gulp. Usually when I throw out a gulp and have a problem in the reel or want to turn my attention to something else and leave the gulp laying in the grass, one will come by and eat it. But pitching shrimp to them works well. I'm not much of a live bait person. Shrimp, actually, the nastier the shrimp, the better. Everyone wants to go out and buy. Everybody wants to go out and buy big hand-picked shrimp and that kind of thing, live shrimp to go catching black drum. And if you take a bag of frozen shrimp, leave it out overnight to where they're almost pink in the morning and they're nasty and they stink real, real bad, I found that being a better bait than even the fresh stuff. A quartered blue crab, or depending upon the size of the drum, a full size blue crab works real well. If you want to try and throw artificials, the exude crabs work real well. I know that I've got buddies of mine that have done pretty good on using gulp peeler crabs, the bigger ones. It can be done, but it's just not one of the fish I tend to target too often. It's more of a accidental catch than anything else. But you'll notice that the fish are going to start to go into, even though we didn't have a very cold winter, we're going to have a good transition period where the bait will show back up again. That's the one thing that did leave that will come back, is that you'll see that you'll have mullet, and you'll have pilchards, and you'll have greenies, and you'll have pigfish and pinfish will be all over the place. And once that all happens, then the fishing's about to get real good. If you want to use live bait, this will be the time of the year to get real good at fishing with live bait. I've always tried to keep it simple where my live bait swims as well as My live bait swims as well as it should without a hook in it, i.e. freelining your baits. If you're in an area where you have some water movement, like we did down in Chokoleski or down towards Sebastian Inlet or even up around Port Canaveral, if you have to use weight to get the bait down, a split shot. You don't have to go with a sliding sinker. You don't have to go with a big pyramid sinker or any of that crap. Just use a small split shot or adjust your size of split shot to what you feel you really need, to allow for that fish to still have that natural movement that he needs to have in order for, say, a big snook to want to eat him or a big tarpon to eat him and that kind of thing. I don't know. I like to think like a fish. And if a mullet is sitting there in my face and just swimming back and forth or just kind of hanging out looking at me in the face, something's not right with him, probably wouldn't want to eat it. And, it's a good idea. What's Chip saying? You're supposed to mute all the phones before entering the... Oh, yeah. Sorry, buddy. It was in my pocket. But, Mark, what do you guys do? I know it's getting late in the show already. I kind of can spout out at my mouth for a while when I'm talking about spring fishing here. But, Mark, what do you guys usually do up there coming into the spring? Does your tactics change? Do your species change? Do you have a different way of approaching fish or what?
You just kind of go into that, migratory mode. of how you're thinking. You know, the fish are moving in, they're trying to get settled down, they're trying to figure things out, so they're, I find that they're a little bit more susceptible to sloppier presentations, I guess, you know, the best way to put it, because they're hungry, you know, for us, they come out of the ocean into, you know, Rudy Inlet or down North Carolina in the, you know, any of those inlets or Lynn Haven. They're just pushing in there and just trying to feed up as much as possible because they've been traveling, just like anyone else would. So, you know, you can really find them and really clobber them pretty good in those channels and sloughs. But this year, you know, it's just been too good for, you know, all winter long. You know, the bass haven't really turned off. I mean, we haven't really had any water to drop down in the low 40s yet. You know, we only had a couple of days where it did that in the one local lake, and that's really shallow. You know, so the bass haven't really, you know, done, you know, the freshwater side. You know, the trout have still been around. It's just been one of those years where, you know, it's looking like, you know, the spring is going to be early and the summer is going to be good for us up here. I mean, you guys are already starting to see the brown clown near you, and that's usually, what, next month, about mid-month, they usually start showing up. I mean, this is wild, man. I mean, we should be expecting them, you know, early May now to show up. I mean, that's just nuttier than a squirrel turd. So, yeah, this is looking like a good year for us, you know, for you guys down there and for us up here.
Yeah.
So, to be truthfully honest, I'm kind of taken aback and not quite sure how I want to approach this year because of how weird it has been.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, down here. We're still catching mangrove snappers inshore, not down in Chukaleska. It doesn't count. It's always dumb like that down there, apparently. But, you know, I see a lot of mangrove snappers still being caught inside Port Canaveral, and that this time of year is really not when we see that. Our best time for catching those bigger mangrove snappers, I'm talking 2 to 5 pound range fish, is in the winter. I mean, is in the dead of the summertime when you have the thunder boomers that come across in the evening. You know, fishing at night around the dock lights in the port and 40 foot of water with shrimp and a split shot and the whole bit. So, but they're still there now, which is just crazy. They should be offshore somewhere doing their thing. But I'm not going to hate on them for it. Rob, what do you do over in the West Coast, or how do you prepare yourself for what's coming as far as the springtime? Is there anything different that you target, or do you have a different technique that you use? You just kind of carry on with what you're doing?
No, it's really strange, you know, especially this year. So it's hard to say. Normally, you know, I'm going to target a lot more river mouths and creek mouths on falling tides and things of that nature for waiting for snook to come out. When the water temperature gets up about 70 or so. It really, seriously, though, it's been such a warm winter. The lowest water temperature I've seen all year was 59 degrees, and that was, like, right around not too long after New Year's. Yesterday it was 66, and we had a pretty good day.
Good deal.
That's about the only thing. I fish probably a lot of the same areas year-round, you know, depending on, you know, water temperature. If it gets too cold, I might go somewhere else. But when the water temp starts coming up, I'm going to definitely target river mouths and creek mouths and things like that on a drop in tide. That's about the only different thing that I do that time of, you know, this time of year as opposed to everything else.
Right on. And Mr. Becker, I know that you've got, what, a full year underneath your belt now, or at least a little bit more than that, of Florida fishing extravaganza. So what do you do differently, or what are you planning on doing differently, if anything, coming into what should be our warmer months here to come?
Yeah, I think in my vast 13 months of experience, 12.76 months, I think, is the exact number, depending on what time it is. I did notice this year that the difference in not having the cold weather You know, last year I came down in, I was told I brought the cold snap to Florida from northeastern New York, and while I wasn't responsible for the largest snook kill in history, I know I stunned a couple of them by moving to Florida. This year, we haven't really had that. We had very little cold weather here, and the times that I have been out fishing, I just haven't seen the cold weather patterns, the larger schools of fish. You know, there's still been bait fish in the shallows for most of the time that that I was out here, and there weren't as many the fish didn't seem to be keying on the crustaceans as much. They hadn't slowed down as much, hadn't moved to the bottom as much. I was still catching catching redfish higher in the water column on Bill Howard's you know, gospel-ridden gold dart, fishing it faster than I would have expected, and fishing it on the bottom, I just wasn't catching the fish. So I think it'll be more of the same. I think it'll be, you know, be looking for the fish. If we get out this weekend, I'll probably be looking to be fishing patterns that last year I would have been fishing at the end of March or the beginning of April, just because we haven't had that that colder weather to slow the fish down and school them up they were before.
Nice. Well, and that's kind of the same stuff I've run into over here. It was, I mean, that shad tail. You'll hear me talk about it a lot on my shows if you're new to listening to my program. DOA makes a great shad tail. Bass Assassin makes a great shad tail. I mean, a shad tail is there's, I don't know, there's a few that are stand out to me as far as a better shad tail than the next, and that's just because of the fact that they have a different wobble to them in the water. I don't want my bait to run straight. I want it to have a real significant wobble to it. If I can't get that from the bait by using a jig head, I'll throw a 3-0 weedless, whether it be a Mission Fish and Slayer or a Mustad weedless jerkbait hook into it with a keel weight, and that usually will tend to kind of wobble it back and forth a little bit.
Hey, Chuck. Quick question. When you do that, where are you hooking it? Are you hooking it, you know, standard like a Texas rig through the nose back out and then back up in the back?
I tend to usually use the ones with the springs in them or the screws in them.
Okay.
And I can just kind of spin it into the nose and then run it right up through the bottom all the way up through the top of the back to where it lays flat.
That works great. Well, let me pass something along that I found just by, not really by accident, but by just experimenting. I took a 3-0, you know, wide gap kale hook type thing, and you can do it with any of those hooks. It seems to work best with that size, and you can vary the size of the hook depending on the weight. But instead of hooking it like that, I've tried hooking it about a quarter inch back through the nose. So you've basically got the hook out in front of the bait, and then the paddle tail hooks through the nose, and then the rest of the paddle tail strung out behind it. It's an amazing amount of action, a real serious amount of wiggle. I haven't seen any decrease in hookups. I've seen a lot more aggressive hits on it, but leave the hook out there. The hook doesn't tend to bunch up, and it's just an amazing amount of action. So when you got nothing else better to do and you're not catching fish, give that a try and see what it looks like.
Sweet. No, I appreciate that. Tips are obviously always welcome, man. As you know, that's probably my number one go-to bait is some sort of a shad tail, and I don't get too caught up into the color combinations and that kind of thing. I really try and make things just as simplistic as I can. I'm not a bass fisherman, so I don't have 465 different colors of worms in my bag, depending upon how light or how dark the water is. I've got five solid colors that I like to use, and that's pretty much it. If they're not eating one of those five colors, then I'm not holding my mouth right or something. I haven't had a bad fishing trip using those baits in a very, very long time. But also too, I go straight to the jerk shad if I need to for a little bit bigger bait presentation. If the mullet are a little bit bigger, the gulp, I hate to admit it, I like to use gulp from time to time. It is one of those things that just works. The RT slugs from Exude, the darts from Exude, The jerk shads from Bass Assassin. There's a local tackle shop, not local tackle shop, but there's a tackle shop in Central Florida called Bitter's Best or Bitter's Bait and Tackle, which is primarily a bass store, and he carries what he calls Bitter's Best Baits, and it's, I think Steve Chapman knows who I'm talking about. Bitter's Best Baits, it's basically a knockoff of everybody who's in the industry. I mean, he bags his own stuff, but you can get two packs of his plastics for $5, which is pretty cheap, considering that most plastics cost anywhere from $3.99 to $7.99, depending on where you're at. And but, you know, the gulp, I'll use the gulp jerk shads in root beer and gold flake, the pearl white, the new penny, the camo color. Sardine color is a good color for snook. But anyhow, it's I don't know. It's just, it's fun this time of year, man, because I really like to get fish angry, and I really like to watch fish aggressively chase down a bait and clobber it like it's their job, you know. And one of the best ways to do that is to use a big enough bait profile that really gets their attention. And just if he doesn't come after it the first time, throw it back in there again and just watch him just push it awake and come up and clobber it. It's a lot of fun. But anyhow, let's see. Chad, what do you guys do up there? I know you're kind of in Wheeler's neck of the woods there, but what do you do differently in the springtime that you wouldn't normally do in the winter? Or with it being an unseasonably warm winter, do you even have anything you're going to be changing about the way you fish?
For the most part, just wear. I follow a pretty solid formula of dividing most of my fisheries into thirds, you know, by their progression. When I do a seminar, I do a SWAT concept. I call it the tactical approach to fishing, which is seasonal progression, weather trends, astrological data, you know, like solar charts, and then temperatures, trend. And for the most part, the fish follow pretty solid patterns, and you just have to think about where they're at relative to the seasonal progression based on, you know, all of those things, regardless of what time of the year it is. But I'll be honest, one of the most often overlooked factors in the fish moving shallow or migrating towards what we would call spring hangouts or summer hangouts is the photo period. And so when you have a really long winter, when it stays super cold, the bass will start to move shallow, the reds will start to move shallow, the specks will start to move shallow, colder than they normally would once the days start to get longer, and then they'll start to migrate to the deeper water. If you have an unseasonably warm winter, they'll start to migrate, you know, the other way when the days start to get shorter, just because historically that's how they've, you know, they've kind of survived, is by not getting caught, you know, with one of those brutal fronts coming through that drops the water temperatures down, you know, 30 degrees in a night or something like that. So what I generally do is I find that when you've got these quirky years, these, you know, El Nino years or whatever you want to call it, that I just try to find those areas that they can live two seasons in one day. What I mean by that is, you know, find 3 foot of water near 10 foot of water, or 3 foot of water near 6 or 8 foot of water. That way they've got that safety of being able to drop back off into a little bit deeper water, but still have access to that shallow water that their brain is screaming for them to go to because it seems warm. I kind of don't really like to personify fish, but think about it. When it starts to get spring and you know that there's potential for it to get cold, you'll leave the house, but you might wear shorts and a shirt, but you'll carry a jacket. So to carry the jacket for them is stay close to deep water. So I kind of think of it like that, or when I relate it to people, I think of it like that. So I generally break out the charts, you know, break out the historical data in my logbooks and start to figure out when I was catching and where, and try to figure out the why. But generally, I use like the 20-20 rule this time of year for bass, and then the 20-200 rule for saltwater fish, meaning, you know, 200 yards to a channel or 200 yards to a deeper area for saltwater, but usually do the 20 feet to 20 feet or whatever the deepest 20% of the area that the bass live in, they stay within, you know, 20 yards or so of that until the weather stabilizes. So, you know, I will take a bathymetry data or, you know, a topo map or whatever information that I can find and dissect the fishery. So some people think I'm more anal than anybody else, but to me it's what puts fish in the boat and it gives me the confidence when I'm out on the water to think that I'm going to catch fish. And if I think I'm going to catch fish, I fish harder and generally leads to catching more fish even if I was, you know, dead wrong. So I also realize that comfort is a big deal for us as much as for the fish, so I try not to go as early if it's going to be super cold so that, you know, I don't fish for 4 hours and my confidence starts to wane right about the time the fish are starting. So I generally try to get there about 2 hours before the solar charts say that you should and start fishing slow and then work my way progressively a little more aggressive and just think about it like, you know, I think about it like play time, like game time. I think of the deeper water as the locker room and the shallower water is like they're running out on the field. So when they're in the locker room, if you set the sandwich in their lap, they might eat it. But when it's game time, they'll chase it down. So I go more slow presentations, you know, on the outer edges of the feeding time and then get a little more aggressive into the power fishing stuff, the spinnerbaits, buzzbaits, topwaters, you know, jerking a fluke. I might dead stick a fluke when it's off peak and before the water's warmed up, but then take that same fluke and speed it up when it gets a little more into the feeding time and the water warms up. Some guys were talking about it just now in this conversation. Like, I like taking a fluke and putting a 5-0 worm hook on it with a bullet weight in front of it and fishing it deep and just kind of dragging it on the bottom and stopping it. But then when it really, they get aggressive, I'll take all that off and nose hook it with either a wide gap nose hook or a bait hook or a circle hook, and then it gives more action to the bait and just, you know, do a twitch reel, fish it almost like a topwater. So, you know, to answer your question, I do stuff differently, but it's still kind of the same way I do it all year long. I figure out where I think they're going to be and just attack it that way. And for the most part for me this year, the key this time of the year is to find deeper water, the shallow water near deeper water, because they're still going to move shallow. They're starting to move into that pre-spawn. They're starting to move into that really aggressive feeding nature for the largemouth. And then for the saltwater species, you know, the bait fish are there. I mean, they're starting to get aggressive. The water temps are cranking up. The baits are, you know, everything's migrating. The thermocline's starting to change and rate and come up. And you know, there's all kinds of stuff that's going on. So the fish are seeing the signs. I just think that they're a lot further along in their migratory route than normal, but their tendencies are about the same. You know what I'm saying? They're still going to seek that safe haven because, you never know this time of year when a front will blow in and drop the water temperature back, you know, 15 to 20 degrees. I didn't tell anybody that I'm friends with that I went fishing today, so if you're listening, then you didn't get a call. I'm sorry. I just was ready to go fishing with no cameras and no nothing today and just fish for me. And I went bass fishing. I was catching on topwater frogs today. So, and that's February, 26th in Virginia. So they're definitely a lot more aggressive. And I was fishing in the same spot that first episode we released back with Bassin was shot. And, you know, so it's 2-3 foot deep max. And the water temperature was still in the high 50s for the majority of the water column. But, the upper 6 inches was almost 65 degrees. So they were blasting the frog. I mean, they're blasting the frog. They were hitting the speed crawl and the retrieve. I didn't really fish any slow presentations today. I got a few on spinnerbaits. Their pads are not back, so I still got the ability to run baits all over the top of potholes and stuff. So it was good. I'm going spec fishing tomorrow because we went spec fishing right before. We just went on this road trip to the Bassmasters Classic, and the big specs were just on fire. I had one, I don't know, probably close to 12 pounds right at the side of the boat on an X-strap, and she head shook, tail danced, threw the lure back at me and laughed at me, and she kicked water in my face, and I lost her. But we found some really big trout 2 weeks ago, and then another cold front blew in and kind of shut them down, fished about 4 days for them, and one day they were good, another day they were mediocre, and then the other 2 days they were non-existent. But now I think they're going to be back on, and you know, I'm going to do some more salt water and try to put a big old gator in the boat up in Virginia, and then switch back to bass fishing because I got to go film another episode in 2 weeks down in South Carolina. So it's been good, man. I've been having a blast. It's frustrating having to always like have a camera on you. You know, everybody. I know there's plenty of people probably going, "Oh, you poor thing," but you know, it was good today to just get out there and fish. You know, I didn't even take a GoPro or I didn't even take a fixed camera. I just went. It was good. Three rods instead of seven. And I just said, I'm going to catch them on a frog or not catch them, so who cares? And it was good.
Nice.
But, yeah, you know, I just generally try to focus on those transition areas is what I call it, you know, the areas where they can still kind of make it back to safety, you know, like little kids play in base when you're a kid, you know, how far you get away from the base before somebody changes and you can run back and not get it, you know, get tagged it. But I think they're kind of like that this time of year. They really, they're non-committal about moving into that spring pattern. But if you get them at the right time of the day, at the feeding time and everything's going on, then you can blast them. You can flat blast them. So I'm pumped. I can't wait for it to just be real spring instead of this teaser spring. You know, this is kind of foreplay. I'm ready to get naked. You know what I'm saying? So.
good deal, man. Good deal. Well, I'm glad that everything's going good for you with the show and with taping and all that stuff. And I appreciate all the really good information you just dropped. That's something that I didn't really get to, didn't have a chance to really talk about too much, and I'm losing people out of the chat room. I ran over a little bit tonight. Logs, fishing logs. I have a real hard time of remembering to do that. But what I have done is I make sure that I take at least one or two pictures on every trip of the area I launched at, of the fish that I've caught there, whatever. And it kind of gives me an idea of, okay, I can look back now and remember, okay, on this date, this is what I did. This is kind of more of a visual than just reading it on paper. I'm really bad about getting home and writing a log or what have you. But, you know, with that being said, I think I'm going to call it a night. I got a lot of people that are getting ready to jump out of here, out of the chat room. I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. Landon Crew and Mr. Becker, Rob earlier, the Spiker for calling me. Chad, thank you very much for getting a hold of us here and dropping some knowledge on us. We appreciate it as always. It's always fun, man, to do these shows and to hopefully pass along some knowledge I've learned over the years I've been fishing. And, you know, I like to hear everybody else's interpretations of what they do too. So, but if you have any questions, you want to get a hold of me, feel free to email me. It's chuckskayakadventures@hotmail.com. If we're not friends on Facebook, go ahead and send me a request. Charles Levi is just my thing. I'm going to be switching my page over here shortly to Redfish Chuck, and also redfishchuck.com. Hopefully will come online here shortly. I think Miss Brittany there in the chat room is going to help me out with that, I hope. Or maybe even Steve Chapman if Brittany is too busy with all the fun things she has going on. But everybody can be my friend. Yes, that is true. Even you, Mr. Becker, with your eye contact man hugs. real quick, want to thank my sponsors. Got to do this every show. Jackson Kayaks. If you've ever thought about getting into Jackson, try them out. They're great boats. Got some really exciting stuff coming along, you know, I'll be doing some video and stuff out of hopefully what should be the next big thing in tandem boats as soon as mine arrives, hopefully in about a month or so. Tackle Webs, Captain Mike Ortego, he's got a great product out there called Tackle Webs. If you're not familiar with it, check them out, tacklewebs.com. You can attach this mounting system to, or this storage system to almost any seat in a kayak underneath the seat, and us that have frame chairs on the back of your cargo area. for extra tackle storage. Mike's good people, really good friend of mine. I appreciate it if you give him some love and go to his website and check out his products. Yeti coolers, wildly stronger, keeps ice longer, whatever. Sounded good. Bending branches paddles, they will get you to the fish on the fish in a hurry. Great paddles. BloodyDex.com. Check out BloodyDex.com if you're not a member of BloodyDex. It is one of the largest fishing forums on the web. They have 80,000 plus members. They cover everything from inshore to offshore, all around the world. Great guys. Check them out. YakAngler.com, your ultimate kayak fishing resource. Guys, give some love to Chad. Chad Hoover's done a lot of good things for the kayak fishing community over at Hooked One. Yak Attack. Luther over at Yak Attack is probably the most innovative guy that I know of in the kayak fishing world. He's guys constantly coming up with new stuff, mad scientist of the kayak fishing world. So show him a little bit of love, too. If you don't already own any of the Yak Attack type stuff, check it out. But with that, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for joining me on this fine Monday evening. Again, I am your host, Charles Levi, also known as Redfish Chuck. And I shall talk to you guys later. Trey and Logan, please sleep tonight. I'm getting really tired of having to wake up with you. Good night.
Give me the flats of dawn with plenty of tailing fish
and the perfect fly rod.
Yeah.
And get ready for some magic.
Oh, that's awesome eat! But I got one! Oh, damn, I got him! I got him!
Join Bonefish and Tarpon Trust.
Nice fish.
And help make sure that the magic never ends. Visit tarbone.org to find out how you can help.